Chapter 17. We rolled out in 55 minutes. The Blue Beetle was full, but we weren't going more than a half dozen blocks. The entry into the proper way was in an alleyway behind a brownstone apartment building in a fairly typical Chicago neighborhood. It was getting late, so there wasn't much traffic, and Mouse ghosted along behind us, staying mostly in the shadows and easily keeping pace with the car. Which speaks to my dog's mightiness, and not my car's wimpiness. Seriously. Molly pulled up to the mouth of the alley and stopped. She looked nervously around as we unloaded from the car. I gave Susan a hand out of the tiny back seat, and then held the door open as Mouse jumped up into the passenger seat. I ruffled his ears and leaned back to speak to Molly. Go get coffee or something. Give us about an hour and a half tops. We'll be back by then. What if you aren't? Molly asked. She reached one hand over to Mouse in an unconscious gesture, burying her fingers in his fur. What do I do then? If we don't show up by then, go on back home to your folks' place. I'll contact you there. But what if, Molly? I said firmly. You can't plan for everything, or you never get started in the first place. Get a move on. And don't take any lip from the dog. He's been uppity lately. Okay, Harry, she said, still unhappily. She pulled out into the street again, and Mouse turned his head to watch us as she drove away. Poor kid, Susan said. She doesn't like being left behind. I grunted. That kid's got enough power to take all three of us down if she caught us off guard, I said. Her strength isn't an issue. I'm not talking about that, obviously. I frowned. What do you mean? Susan frowned at me briefly, and then her eyebrows rose. Dear God, you don't realize it. Realize what? She shook her head, one corner of her mouth crooked into the same smile I remembered so well. It made my heart twitch, if such a thing is possible. Molly has it bad for you, Harry. I frowned. No, she doesn't. We settled that early on. Isn't happening. Susan shrugged a shoulder. Maybe you settled it, but she didn't. She's in love. Is not, I said, scowling. She goes on dates and stuff. I said she was in love, not dead. Her expression went neutral. Or half dead. She stared after the vanished car for a moment and said, Can I share something with you that I've learned in the past few years? I guess. She turned to me, her expression sober. Life is too short, Harry, and there's nowhere near enough joy in it. If you find it, grab it before it's gone. It cost Susan something to say that. She hid it well, but not as well as I knew her. Giving breath to those thoughts had caused her very real pain. I was going to disagree again, but hesitated. Then I said, I never stopped loving you. Never wanted you to be gone. She turned her face a little away from me, letting her hair fall across her face as a curtain. Then she swallowed thickly and said, her voice trembling slightly, Same here. Doesn't mean we get to be together. No, I said. I guess not. She suddenly balled her fists and straightened her spine. I can't do this. Not right now. We've got to focus. She shook her head and started walking. She went to the end of the block to stand there taking deep, slow breaths. I glanced at Martin, who stood leaning against the wall of a building, his expression, of course, bland. What? I snapped at him. You think what you're feeling about your daughter is rage, Dresden? It isn't. He jerked his chin at Susan. That is. She knew the Mendozas, the foster parents, and loved them like family. She walked into their house and found them. She found their children. The vampires had quite literally torn them limb from limb. One of the Mendozas' four children was 3 years old. Two were near Maggie's age. I said nothing. My imagination showed me terrible pictures. It took us half an hour to find all the pieces, Martin continued calmly. We had to put them back together like a jigsaw puzzle. And the whole time, the bloodthirst was driving us both mad. despite the fact that she knew those people, despite her terror for her daughter. Imagine that for a moment. Imagine Susan standing there, filled with the urge to rip into the bloody limb with her teeth, even though she knew that the little dismembered leg might have been her daughter's. Picture that. At that point, I didn't think I could avoid it. It was only when the puzzle was finished that we realized that Maggie had been taken, Martin continued, his words steady and polite. She's barely holding on. If she loses control, people are going to die. She might be one of them. Martin's eyes went hard and absolutely cold. So, I would take it as a fucking courtesy if you wouldn't torture her by stirring up her emotions 5 minutes before we kicked down the door of a high-security facility. I looked over my shoulder at Susan. She was still facing away from us, but she was in the act of briskly pulling her hair back into a tail. I didn't know, I said. In this situation, your emotions are liabilities, Martin said. They won't help Rodriguez. They won't help the little girl. I suggest you postpone indulging them until this is all over. Until what is all over? Susan asked, returning. The trip, I said, turning to lead them into the alley. It won't take us long, about 30 seconds of walking down a level hallway, but it's dark, and you have to hold your breath and nose the whole way. Why? Susan asked. It's full of methane gas and carbon monoxide, among others. If you use a light source, you run the risk of setting off an explosion.